As the Trump regime continues with mass arrests and deportations of immigrants, polls show that a majority of Americans believe these actions by immigration and customs enforcement have, quote, gone too far, unquote. Many people recoil from the pictures on the news of masked ICE agents on city streets grabbing people who look Latino and whisking them away to crowded jails and deporting thousands of people to places unknown. Well, Mike, the Trump regime has indeed gone very far in its anti-immigrant campaign. How far is too far for the general public? What's your assessment?
Well, we're going to find out. We are finding out as we go. But what has really may change the game is this big, beautiful bill, this budget that just passed, makes ICE's budget about 8 times bigger than it is right now. It provides for the construction of tens of thousands of new prison cells aimed for not criminals, but for people who violated one or another of the deportation rules. It amounts to some $75 billion. And J.D. Vance said that regarding Medicaid, oh, there's a little give and take here and there, but none of that matters compared to the critical thing of the monstrous, or rather, he didn't use the word monstrous, but the enormous increase in the budget provisions for ICE agents and for building new prisons.
The real jewel in the crown for this king is the crackdown on foreigners in general, immigrants, in the Make America White Again campaign.
Well, that's exactly what they're doing. The fear, of course, is of dark brown gangsters, criminals, murderers, rapists. But the actual arrests are taking place in the Home Depot parking lot, or they're grabbing people off the streets. The actual behaviors of ICE, which I'm happy to say, are being recorded all over the country, but particularly in the targeted town of Los Angeles right now. LA is being the new version of what Portland was back in 2020 with the Black Lives Matter. It's being made an example of. And Trump has got federal troops, he's got nationalized state troops. They're doing performative sweeps like through MacArthur Park on horseback. You've got long rows of running policemen next to policemen riding on horses, just running through big greens, which are only occupied by children from daycare centers. You've also got masked agents in cars picking people up, grabbing them, disappearing them. And the heartening thing to me is that how much real resistance there is, how much recording of all this is going on, how much mobilization has happened, and how much regular TV stations with daily news are featuring all these details. That's having a profound effect, and I think has led to the poll you started off with, which is that most people are not really happy with all this. So aside from the economic consequences, which are profound,
Because our economy generally is very dependent on immigrant labor, and particularly Latino immigrant labor.
well, it always has been. It has been at every level. I mean, who raises their children to grow up and work in slaughterhouses or to be day laborers or work in hot fields, harvesting food, bending over all day long?
Or
These.
in hotels cleaning after rich people and their all-night parties.
That's right. There's a host of jobs that are not pleasant but are essential. And those jobs are all being filled today by immigrants.
There's been a real effective campaign in LA that focuses on naming people, also around the country, naming people who've been detained, having pictures on telephone poles throughout LA, missing mother, is swept away, and that really humanizes the people who've been victims of these sweeps and deportations. What about these different strategies of resistance?
Well, that's a profoundly effective strategy. It makes this nameless dark gangster into a real live person. And it is something that it's made for TV news. So it's featured on nightly newscasts in Los Angeles. And it gives plaintiffs, it works at every level. This works from the very bottom level of the jobs that nobody in their right mind wants to work who was born in the United States, all the way up to the most rarefied high-tech jobs, the most lucrative scientific and technological work. All these jobs are filled by foreigners, and many of these foreigners in universities may not hew the line of politics that the current administration wants. These ideas of pro-Hamas loving university types are symbols of the regime that hates cities. The Trumpian regime hates New York. It hates Los Angeles. It hates places which are dynamic, problematic, troublesome, exciting, infuriating, but real, and the most active and dynamic parts of the United States. But there, too, individuals make the difference. If you feature a person who is a teacher who is afraid to leave the country to appear at a conference because he or she will not be allowed back into this country, you can get into the First Amendment and its real repercussions when you declare that people who hold certain ideas are subject to being deported.
So there are different urban nightmares that haunt these right wingers. One is Los Angeles as a site of what they see unfolding horrors, which has a very large Latino population. It's a very vibrant, big city, but has and of course is associated with Hollywood and a very dynamic set of industries that are is very different than the Bay Area and the kind of tech world, but has a strong progressive history of resistance to the right-wing forces in California, which are very deep, the role of conservatives in California. But that's different from the scenes in New York and Boston that are more associated with affluent or educated, highly educated immigrants who come in on student visas. Let's talk a bit about the place of those two scenes, the East Coast and the West Coast in the right-wing popular imaginary, and then turn to the trial unfolding now in Boston with students at the center, students and professors.
Well, you've named it these fear of pullulating masses of foreigners that has guided American politics actually for a long, long time. The irony is, I read the LA Times every morning, but today's story featured the fact that the murder rate in Los Angeles has plummeted. It's dropped to lower than it's been since 1968, almost 80 years. And it's similarly dropped all over the country from having gotten really high in the first year or two of the COVID pandemic. This now in Los Angeles, it's about one-fourth of what it was 4 years ago.
Yeah, so what about now this shift with this big ugly bill of a lot of the federal funding moving from everyday policing to immigration enforcement? Apparently, that's a very big shift in the priority of criminal justice at the federal level.
Well, it's creating a private police force for Donald Trump. ICE is expanding to unprecedented levels, and $45 billion is set aside to build new prisons to incarcerate people. And an agency that has a budget of about $8 billion this year will have a budget of two, three, four, and five times as much over the next 4 years. So that is truly scary. I mean, there are limits to how far police can go, due precisely to the fact that because Los Angeles is about half Hispanic or Latino, there's going to be a huge popular resistance. That's a 10 million people. And if people are alert and galvanized, the size of the army will not really matter that much. There's only their limits to how big they can grow it. But still, that kind of force within the hands of a completely new system of governorship is unprecedented. Nobody really knows how it's going to break.
Well, let's turn to this site of resistance in the course in the courts on the East Coast. The trial underway in Boston. The case was brought by the chapter by chapters of the American Association of University Professors (AUP) and the Middle East Studies Association or MESA. MESA, following the arrest and detention of non-citizen students and scholars who've spoken out on Palestinian rights. The government claims the authority to deport non-citizens who have committed no crimes but whose presence it deems poses a threat to U.S. foreign policy. And the Ramya Krishnan, an attorney representing the academic groups in the case, argues that the government has adopted, quote, a policy of ideological deportation and is chilling the speech of students and professors alike. Mike, can you comment on the case and its significance?
Well, it's a great trial, and it really is the cutting edge of First Amendment law. And the government is saying, first, it said that there is no First Amendment guarantee for people who are not citizens. Then it walked that back and said, well, there are nuances, and the judge is very dubious, I'm happy to say, about their claim that the First Amendment depends on whether or not you're a citizen. But there are people who are talking about the chilling effect, and they're describing, testifying as to how the fact that people have been, that saying something against critical against Israel is being promptly characterized as a pro-Hamas view, and therefore violating American foreign policy, and therefore it makes you subject to being deported. The government has waffled, saying, well, we're not really doing that. There is no such law. But then, when confronted with texts, including statements from the Secretary of State Rubio and Trump himself, saying that they're going to get rid of these people, the government is, it's not clear where their position will finally be. The trial is ongoing now, with lots of evidence being presented from people who talk about how they have been inhibited from making statements about what they truly believe. And they've withdrawn op-ed pieces, that they've been chilled, in effect, by the fear of being deported or by not being allowed to return to this country.
So, how effective is a line of argument and evidence of that sort? Because, of course, some of these organizations like ADL and AIPAC have gathered up hyperinflated data to support their claims that Palestinian protests on campuses have been threatening to Jewish students by saying they feel uncomfortable, they feel like they can't say what they think. How important is that subjective perception as a legal argument versus the evidence of overt actions of various kinds, of which there are many of students who have been deported, students and faculty disciplined, fired? What
Well,
about that sense of a perception of a threat versus the actual threat?
it's a fundamental part of the First Amendment, Jan. The idea of a chilling effect has been around for many decades. It's a recognition of the truth that those people who have been publicly banned or from speaking, or who have been threatened with deportation, or who've been actually arrested and seized, are one part of the story of free expression. But a huge part, and this has been understood from the 18th century, is that if you are afraid that that might happen to you, you're not likely to speak. And so the repercussions of those arrests are profound. It's like the tip of an iceberg. 7/8 of the discussion remains underwater. And so people don't say what they believe, or they hesitate in saying it. They debate it. They go through mental anguish or mental gyrations and then decide to talk or not. All of that is considered the chilling effect of laws that ban free speech or otherwise punish people for talking or expressing views.
So, if pro-Israel students on campuses were disciplined or expelled or suffered repercussions for their defense of Israel, they would have a case.
Yeah.
But that the evidence of that is, I think, quite scarce.
Well, evidence, chilling effect is, of course, much harder to show. It's a very real thing. But people, Jewish students, as you describe, or pro-Palestinian students or faculty members, can and do experience a reluctance to express themselves if they think they're going to be punished.
There's massive evidence of that, of disciplinary procedures that have been increasingly criminalized, with courts defining, using the IRA definition, defining criticism of Israel as a form of anti-Semitism, so that then those become very, very real consequences if your activity is in violation of civil rights laws just by expressing support for Palestinian rights.
Any arrest or any disciplinary action or any firing reverberates. It not only impacts the person to whom that action is aimed, but it means all kinds of other people are not going to say or write what they really feel and what they really want to say or write.
So this will be something to follow as that trial with a bench decision concludes. It may have concluded even by the time our piece airs. Mike, are there other signs of hope for these hard and harsh times?
Well, actually, there are, in addition to the active resistance by all kinds of people with their cell phones who are filming ICE and who are organizing against it in hotels and everywhere. There's also a lawsuit brought by those people that was just joined yesterday by 17 states, including states like Arizona, that are surprising, who are suing the ICE for stopping and seizing people without explanation and for its other blatantly illegal activities. So that's a powerful, it ups the ante considerably and means there may be more corners of resistance and pockets of opposition than I had hoped for before.
Where's the court? What court is that case being filed at?
In Los Angeles right now. It's Los Angeles being supported by 17 state governments.
Well, that's something to follow. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, see you in court's one line, but it all depends on being seen in the streets too.
Absolutely. Well, always, it takes both to get anywhere.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Mike.